I download and listen to podcasts periodically when I walk, listen to those daily. And some of those I listen to on a regular basis. And one of my favorites is a podcast called Stuff You Never Learned in History Class, which is really an interesting podcast. And on one of those occasions, they will often group things about different points in history. And one of those podcasts was Famous Traitors, not T-R-A-D-E-R-S, but T-R-A-I-T-O-R-S, traitors, famous traitors in history. Now, I'm not going to ask you to answer out loud, but I want you to think, could you even name some? Would you know who famous traitors are in history? Well, we can definitely go to the Bible, and that's where we're going to end up tonight with Judas. But there are some others historically. There was Brutus, who gave over Julius Caesar at the steps of the Senate, who orchestrated the death of his dear friend. And there's always Benedict Arnold. Americans know him well, who was a traitor of this country. And the man we're going to talk about tonight. What is a traitor? We talk about Judas betrayed Jesus, and the word in the betrayed that's part of the root word for traitor comes from a Latin term literally meaning to give over or to turn over to somebody else. So we can understand how that would be. We might even think of, though we wouldn't use this word in this way, in Latin terms, this would be true. If somebody gave up somebody who was running from the law and gave them over to the law, you understand that term? If they said, that person who robbed the bank, they're staying right here in my basement apartment, and they're here right now if you want to come get them. Technically, that person's a traitor. I think we would all put it in different terms than that because traitor doesn't have a good connotation in any circumstance. But literally, that's what it means, to give over something. Traitors give up or turn over things to others. Let's take Benedict Arnold. Benedict Arnold tried to make a treaty with the British that would have endangered the attempts of the people in this country to form our own nation. And so we rightly call him a traitor. But a lot of times it all depends on your viewpoint. There was a bumper sticker a few years ago in London that said Benedict Arnold was a patriot. Well, from the British viewpoint, he could be a hero. He could have been. Had he been successful, he would have saved them a lot of grief and turmoil if he could have turned this country over to them, if he had given it over, like we're talking about. So sometimes it's your perspective as to whether somebody really is a traitor or not. But when we use the term, here's what we almost always mean by it. A traitor is somebody who should be loyal, who gives up that which they should be loyal to for some kind of gain or personal benefit, usually by duplicity or deception. So when somebody gives up secrets to nuclear weapons or military weapons and they give it to another country, we call them traitors because they usually do that for gain, for money. They've given up something they should have been loyal to because they're Americans or whatever country they may be part of. And for money, they sell their loyalty, which should have been theirs, they sell it for something else. We understand that. I want you tonight to see Judas in that light. I want you to understand Judas as he is one of those faces at the cross, as he is one of those who is around the death of Jesus, See him for what he really is. He is in every way a traitor. He has given up something he should have been loyal to in order to gain something else. Luke 22 is where we're going to begin tonight. Luke chapter 22. If you will, take your Bibles, turn to that. We're going to read the first six verses of that. All the people in the back are saying, give me a Bible. He's coming back here. Hurry up. Give me one. I don't have a Bible. Give me a songbook, something. Let me look like I'm reading with him, you know. Luke 22, verse 1. Now the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which is called the Passover, was approaching. The chief priests and the scribes were seeking how they might put him to death, for they were afraid of the people. And Satan entered into Judas, who was called Iscariot, belonging to the number of the 12. And he went away, and he discussed with the chief priests and officers how he might betray him to them. And they were glad and agreed to give him money. So he consented and began seeking a good opportunity to betray him to them apart from the crowd. Judas is a traitor. I want to suggest three things he gave over, using that literal Latin term. He gave over three things. He gave up, turned over to somebody else, three things that he should have held on to. First of all, Judas gave over his belief. He gave it up. You say, what was his belief? Listen, if anybody had a reason to believe in Jesus, it's a guy like Judas. Notice that it says in that text in Luke that he was numbered among the 12. What does that mean? Numbered among the 12. Well, let me tell you what that means in practical terms. You go back and read those Gospels all the way through, and you will see a group of only 12 men, a very exclusive group, who heard Jesus speak daily for 3 years. For 3 years. Now, I just want you to imagine what that must have been like. I was in school, and I heard a teacher in first grade, and a teacher in second grade, and a teacher in third, and fourth, and fifth, and sixth. And then I went to classes where I changed around, and I heard different teachers. I heard them every day, 5 days a week, but I only heard them for a year. Only 1 year. And then I went to another teacher. I heard somebody else. And then when I got to college, I heard teachers, but it was only 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, and those changed every semester. There isn't a single person in my lifetime that I have personally sat at the feet of and heard teach for 3 years. Not one. I mean, unless you had a teacher who was in first grade with you and then said, I like that student so much, I'm going to transfer to second grade, and then I'm going to transfer to third grade, which I don't think happened to you. We've never heard anybody teach for three solid years. But the disciples heard that with Jesus. They traveled with him. I want you to think of what that meant to somebody like Judas. 3 years in the school of Christ. Imagine all the things he heard Jesus say. Imagine all the wonderful things that came from the lips of Jesus. We only have a few of them. I'm telling you, we have very few things Jesus said compared to the 3 years he spoke. Can you imagine the private conversations he had with the disciples and what those revealed about him? Can you imagine sitting around a fire with Jesus and just talking at the end of the day about how things went? Can you imagine what that must have been like? Judas was there. He laid down next to him at night and slept. They talked under the stars. They talked when they walked. He heard him. He saw him. He watched him interact with people. You know, I have to tell you, it doesn't matter who you are, how good you are. It doesn't matter how good you are. all of us do things, say things, and are things that we'd be embarrassed to have other people know. All of us. Even at our very best, when we're the very best we can be, we still make mistakes like that. Well, we sure saw that in political races all the time, where some politician who's always so careful about what he says or what she says makes an aside comment to somebody, and that joke becomes public knowledge because somebody heard it and publishes it, and now all of a sudden it paints him in a whole different light. Or, you know, we get mad about something and we just don't act the way we should act, not the way we want people to see us. And we regret those things because they reveal us. I remember on one occasion, I was driving in traffic, and I was in a gospel meeting. And I was trying to make my way to the church building, and another car pulled out right in front of me. I mean, pulled out right in front of me, made a left-hand turn right in front of my car. And I did what I'm not proud of doing, but I did what I did. I laid on the horn. I didn't do a little beep, beep. You know, I didn't do that. Like, you made a mistake. I did a, you know, like, you clown. You know, I beeped the horn hard, and threw my hands up in the air. That's my, you know, my frustration. Person in the car just driving along. I'm right behind him. Get see the sign to the church building. They pull in right in front of me. Right in front of me. Oh, what do you do? You know, boy, I got to get that horn fixed. It just kind of goes off on its own sometimes, you know. And then the flies in my car, you know, whoa. You know, what do you do? See, I'm not proud of that. I mean, it's funny, and that person was kind. In fact, they got out of the car and said, you're a little angry about that, weren't you? You know, yeah, I'll join you on the front row at the end of services. Pray for me, you know. But we do that, don't we? Let me tell you something. The disciples were with Jesus for 3 years. 3 years. They never saw him do that. I don't mean that exact thing. I mean, they never saw him do something that he said, I'm so embarrassed I did that. Never. Never did that. Never lost his temper when he shouldn't. Only filled with righteous indignation. He never said at the end of the day, oh, I can't believe I let that slip and said what I said. That was just the wrong thing to say. He never did that. How do you live with a guy like that for 3 years and not be incredibly impressed at his purity? How can you? And yet, here's Judas at the end of this time giving up that Jesus. Giving up that Jesus. The Jesus who chose him to be one of the 12, to hear him speak, to live with him. He gave up all those beliefs that should have been his. I'll tell you what else he gave up. He gave up the miracles. I mean, the miracles he saw Jesus perform. Could anybody doubt who saw the things Judas saw? Could anybody doubt this man has divine power? He saw him raise the widow of Nain's son from the dead. He saw him cure people with leprosy and blindness, people who couldn't hear anything. People who had never spoken a word. People who had never walked of their own accord. Judas saw that. And here he is giving it up. Doesn't matter anymore. He's giving him over. He saw Jesus at the best of his times and the worst of his times. And even in the worst, Jesus was best. And we come to the end of days and we're frazzled and worn and we're not quite as congenial and kind as we ought to be, maybe not as merciful as we ought to be because we're just tired. Or for some people, it's just being hungry. You know, when you're hungry, you're in a bad mood. My wife's one of those people. You know, she'll say occasionally, I'm sorry, I'm irritable, I'm just hungry. I was like, well, let's get some food in you soon. You know? there are things that, or we have a headache, you know, and we don't react like we ought to. We're not as nice as we ought to be. We're curt with people, or somebody just got on our last nerve. Listen, you don't think Jesus went through some of those things? You don't think Jesus had headaches, that he was hungry, that he was stressed, that his schedule was way too heavy for him, that he was carrying a lot of burdens, that he was multitasking in his world? Yes, all those things are true. And the disciples never said, not one of his best days. He sure didn't act right today, did he? Calls himself the Son of God. He sure didn't act like it to me today. Never. Never in 3 years did they see him that way. Have you ever thought about that? Judas saw Jesus every day, and every day at the end of the day said, yep, just like the Son of God. Another day, just like the Son of God. Yet he gave him over. I'll tell you what else he gave over. Judas gave over a friend. It's one thing to give somebody up because you hate them now. And in some occasions, governments have exploited people's feelings. A person who's passed over for promotions in a very high secret position may be approached by somebody from another country. Wouldn't you like to get even? They haven't appreciated you. We appreciate you. Use those mind games and convince the person they ought to give them over because they haven't been treated right. No, Judas was treated well. He was a hand-picked disciple. There were a lot of other people out there that Jesus could have picked. Can you imagine how you would feel if you're among a huge crowd of people and Jesus says, well, it's time for me to pick. Would the following 12 people please step forward? Here's my final count. And everybody's palms are sweaty. Oh, is it going to be me? Is he going to pick me? Peter, would you come? Peter comes. Andrew, your brother, would you join him? And then he comes down and he says, Judas Iscariot, come join the 12. The 12. And there they are standing there. And there's another group of 70 out there that weren't chosen. And there's another great multitude that wasn't chosen. And he's hand-picked by Jesus to be his friend and disciple. He was entrusted with the teachings of Jesus. That's what Jesus was trying to do. He was giving to them treasures. Every day he was saying, here's another nugget of wisdom. You need to hold on to it so you can give it to other people. Because I'm not going to be here long. So I want to give it to you. Jesus invested that in Judas. He gave him those things and expected him to pass it on to other people. And then he was entrusted with the physical treasury. Judas evidently was good with money, maybe because he liked it too much. But Jesus let him hold the purse. When, you know, that's a pretty big job. You know, every time they went to eat somewhere, they stepped up to the counter at the Palestinian version of McDonald's. And Judas was always at the back of the line. Jesus said, the guy in the back will get the bill. He'll take care of it. He'll take care of it. And after they had all ordered, of course I'm speaking figuratively here, but the idea is the same. Judas came up with a purse and he paid for it. When they went to a hotel, Judas was the one that said, how much is it going to cost, all 12 of us? How much does it cost? We'll pay for it. We'll pay for it. I'll buy the food. How much money do we have, Judas? We've got this amount now. Some people have given us some money. We've gotten some donations. Here's how much we have. Here's where we are. That's a big job. Because those 12 guys didn't work while they were with Jesus. They couldn't hold down their regular jobs. I'm not sure some of them were great at their jobs anyway. Somebody made the comment about Peter, Andrew, James, and John. They were fishermen, but most of the time what we find them doing is mending nets. More repairs. When are we going to quit hanging up these nets on snags? Something's got to give. So Judas is responsible for all that. He's the man who carries the purse strings. I'll tell you what else he did. He ate meals with Jesus. You say, well, that's not that big a deal. Oh, yeah, it really is. So let me tell you something. In Psalm 41, verse 9, if you want to go back there, I'm just going to read one verse for you. But Psalm 41, verse 9, This is a Psalm of David, and it's prophetic in its nature. Here's what we read. Even my close friend in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted up his heel against me. You know what that's literally what he's saying, and it's a symbolic thing, but literally he's saying, the guy I gave every favor to, who ate my bread, put his feet under my table, ate my sustenance, that guy has lifted up his heel to stomp me, to crush me. Now, it's one thing to have somebody do that you don't know very well. It's another thing altogether to have somebody that you've pampered and taken care of do that very thing to you. And I want to tell you, that was a big point. Because not only was that a prophetic statement, Jesus mentions it on the night of his betrayal. Luke 22, verse 21, the hand of the one betraying me is with me on the table. I imagine all the disciples were sitting around that table and they had their hands out and they were holding on to things and they had them clasp at the table as they're listening to Jesus. And Jesus says, the hand of the one betraying me is on this table. I wonder if any of the disciples just kind of took their hands off real quick. And Judas was the only ones left. I don't think that's the way it was. But Jesus was saying, he's right here. He's at this table. He is eating my food. Mark 14, verse 18, he stresses that. The one who is eating with me, is going to betray me. In Leonardo da Vinci's famous painting, The Last Supper, while there are some anachronistic problems with that painting, the way all the disciples are at the table, and they're all on one side of the table, almost like they're posing for a portrait picture or something that somebody out there is taking. Nobody has their back to the picture. If you've ever seen that and looked at it, you may wonder, at what moment was Da Vinci picturing the disciples? Because you see them in various poses, but most of them are kind of pulled back like they're looking up at Jesus. There are a couple of them that have their hands up. It's hard to read the expressions on their faces. But Da Vinci told us the moment he painted was the moment after Jesus said, the one who betrays me is in this room. And those disciples are pulling back in horror. They're recoiling from that. This is not his statement, we are one, as the Father and I are one, or I want you to go out into all the world. It's none of those other things. It's the betrayer is here. And all the disciples are pulling back. We've already talked about that scene in one of the earlier lessons and how proud I am of the disciples and how proud you should be. That their immediate reaction was not, oh, which one is it? It's not me. I know it's not me. It's somebody else who did it. It's Lord. Could it be me? And for 11 of them, the answer is no. There's one guy sitting at that table who's eaten this Passover meal with Jesus, who's getting ready to give him over. If you had been Jesus, what would you have felt toward Judas? Isn't it amazing that Jesus doesn't just expose him right there? Even if he doesn't keep him from doing what he's doing, that he doesn't publicly shame him in front of the other disciples so that they all look at him and with tears rolling down their cheeks say, Judas, how can you do this? How can you do this to him? How can you do this to us? You were one of us, Judas. You were with us. How do you do this? Judas gave over his friend. And third, Judas gave over his values. He betrayed his values. Judas knew what was valuable, and he gave it up. He sold Jesus cheaply. And he sold him like a yard sale item. You know, yard sales, the mentality for yard sales are so funny. My mother can't have yard sales. She can't do it because she thinks everything she has is much more valuable than anybody would pay for it. Because it has sentimental value to her. You know, oh, I remember when we bought these coffee mugs. I remember when we got these. It was on that trip we made to the Great Smoky Mountains, and we bought these as souvenirs. These things have got to be worth at least $20 a piece. Mom, $20 would probably buy everything in the yard. I know how yard sale people work. You know, there are two things about yard sailors. I know, because I've conducted a few yard sales. The one thing, it doesn't matter what price you put on it, they're going to say, can you do better than that? You know, hey, how much you want for this TV? Does it work? Yeah, it works. We just don't need it. How much for it? I don't know, a nickel. Can you do better than that? Yeah, I can pay you $5 and you haul it off. I guess I can do that. And the other thing is, if it's in the yard and it's not moving, it's for sale. You know, how much for that palm tree? Well, that was in the ground. I mean, I didn't intend to take that one up. That front door, is that for sale? You know. How about that little girl? No, that's my daughter. She's just sleeping. She's alive, and we're not selling her today. At yard sales, we tend to take things that may at one time have had value, and we get rid of it. Why? It doesn't have value to us anymore. That's the point. It no longer has value for us. So we do sell it cheaply. We sell it cheaper than we would otherwise. That's why people do yard sales. So people empty their garages, like we have. Empty the garage of all those things you've been storing up and sell them. So you can go to other people's yard sales and buy things and fill your garage back up. We got a whole system going here. It works. Things just keep shifting around. The money just keeps going from hand to hand. Judas gave up things that were valuable to him. I mean, and he gave them over pretty cheaply. Exodus 21, verse 32 says, the price of an ox, if an ox gored a slave, the price you had to pay for that ox in its death was 32 shekels of silver. You had to pay that. If the ox gored your slave, the person had to pay you for that ox goring them 32 pieces of silver. In Zechariah chapter 11, the price paid for a slave was 30 pieces of silver. And in Matthew 27, when Judas goes to the high priest, what is it he says he'll sell Jesus for? 30 pieces of silver. Now, you may say, 30 pieces of silver would be a lot. Look, remember what it was. It was the price of a slave. So that's what you bought a human for. He sold Jesus for the price of a slave. This is like finding the rarest baseball card in the history of the world that's worth millions because it is a one of a kind, and somebody says, what, a dollar? Will you sell it for a dollar? And the person saying, yeah, it doesn't mean anything to me. Here, give me the dollar. Wow. You'd say, whoa, that's an injustice. He sold Jesus for the price of a slave, the purest man who ever lived, he sold. And you may think, well, because that's what they offered him. But you remember when we had our reading at the beginning in Luke 22, it says, and they agreed to the price. Who'd they agree with? Well, who brought the proposition to him? Judas. He set the price. How much are you worth? You worth 30 pieces of silver? You say, well, I had hoped so. Worth $1 million? I hope I am. How about $5 million? You worth $5 million? Those are big numbers. And some of us might start saying, I'm probably not worth more than that. But 30 pieces of silver in that economy, it was nothing. Judas betrayed and gave over his beliefs, his friend, his values. And we rightly say, shame on him. Shame on him for doing that. I mean, he just sold everything he had that had value to him and meaning to him. He gave it all up. What did he get in return? 30 pieces of silver, which he soon realized wasn't what he should have had. He had done the wrong thing, tried to return it, couldn't find forgiveness because of the way he sought it, and he kills himself. He ends up with nothing, buried in a potter's field. All right, what's the point? Well, like we've done in other lessons in this series, here's the point. Are we really any better than him? Now, I want you to think with me for a moment. Have we betrayed our belief in God and in the Word and in the judgment to come? Well, if you're toying with sin in your life, you have. You're saying, I don't really believe this Word. I mean, honestly, just think for a moment. Let me just pick one sin. Just let me pick one, a fairly simple one. And tell me if this doesn't make sense. I know it won't necessarily keep us from doing it, but I think we know the point. Will lying cause you to lose your soul? And the answer is, yeah. Yeah, it will. Lying will cause you to lose your soul. You will be lost if you lie. All liars have their place in the lake that burns with fire. Book of Revelation says that. All liars. And what's a liar? A person who lies. So if I lie, I'm a liar. Now, if I believe God's word, and I believe it's true, I'm giving up my belief that liars will lose their souls if I persist in lying. You get that point? You see that? Yes? No? I mean, that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. I'm saying I don't really believe what the Bible says anymore. But I know the Bible's true. I know that's true. And it's not just lying. I mean, we could do that with any number of sins. That's true for lust. That's true for coveting. That's true for adultery. That's true for murder. That's true for hating. Hating is murder in the heart. Can cause me to lose my soul. I don't need to have room for hate. When I hate, I deny what I believe the Bible teaches. I'm denying it. In practicality, that's exactly what Judas did. Did he know who Jesus was? Sure he did. So how can he give him up? How can he do that to him? All right? Judas gave over his beliefs. I think we do the same thing. Jesus betrayed his friend. We sing all the time about Jesus as our friend. What a friend we have in Jesus. Sometimes we proclaim fervently, I'll be a friend to Jesus. Jesus, our Savior, our friend. Over and over, we talk in those terms about him. But Hebrews chapter 10, verse 29 says, how shall we go on sinning? Because when we do that, we trample underfoot the Son of God. Oh, wow, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? Lifting the heel against a dear friend. We trample the Son of God under our feet. You're giving over your friend. There's not a friend like the lowly Jesus. There isn't. My best friend on earth, is somebody you folks know, Mark Broyles. We grew up together, been friends since we were kids. Aside from my wife, there is no one on this earth who has been a closer friend, and I've known Mark even longer than I've known my wife. He's a great friend. He's a great friend. But he isn't perfect. Nor am I to him. But Jesus is. So when I sin, I trample underfoot my best friend. I mean, my true best friend, the best and greatest friend I've ever had or ever will have. I trample him under my feet when I willfully sin. That's what I do. And finally, I betray my values, just like Judas did. I trade heaven for sin. I'm trading it out. I mean, think about it. I've got this real estate in heaven, and Satan says, "Hey, Ralph, want to trade that? Want to get real mad about something? I mean, really lose your temper and chew somebody out or say things you ought not to say? I'll trade you that satisfying moment of bitter hatred, explosive anger. I'll trade you that. You can have that. You give me heaven." Is there any one of us that would say, "Yeah, that's a fair deal"? Well, of course we wouldn't. Let me ask you this. Is there one of us that would say, "I think it's worth it for one night with a person who's not my mate to spend the evening in sexual sin with that person? I think that's worth eternity"? None of us would say that. But people do it, don't they? We do it. I mean, we do those sins that jeopardize heaven. Heaven. We're willing to put that on the line. That's what Judas did. We trade eternity for a moment. For a moment. You know, this is so temporary. I don't care what the sin is. The greatest drug experience you could ever have in your life. Blow your mind. Think things you've never thought before. It will end. But eternity doesn't. One great night of Mardi Gras, a night on the town, drink all you want to, blitz your mind into oblivion, you're going to wake up from it, and it's not going to be as good then. You willing to trade that? You willing to trade that for eternity? We may say, "Boy, that doesn't make sense when you put it that way, Ralph." That's my point. That's exactly my point. Why will we do that? Lasting joy? Traded for a temporary thrill? We can be just like Judas. And as we shake our heads saying, "What was he thinking? What was Judas thinking? How could he give over all of his beliefs, everything he had worked for? How could he give up his best friend in the world? How could he give over the values that meant something to him? How could he do that?" And I'll tell you, the answer that I would give is, how can I? I don't know, I just get blinded. I get blinded. Satan's good at that. Making me see something temporary. "Oh, that looks good, I'd like to have it. Looks good to eat. It's good for the eye. Make me wise." And there I am, standing next to Eve in the Garden of Eden, saying, "Let's try it." Folks, think about that when you're tempted. Think about Judas. Think about what you're doing. Because I got to tell you, Judas didn't plan this for 3 years. It wasn't from the very beginning. He was plotting it and waiting and waiting. It kind of came on him pretty quickly. And he went immediately and he acted on it and he regretted it. Not for a day, not for a week, but for eternity. Now, I know that about him because Peter calls him the son of perdition. He went to his place. He regrets it for eternity. Don't you do that. Don't regret for eternity sin in this life. Don't be like Judas. If there's something we can do to help you this evening, one last time in this meeting, I'm inviting you to come to the cross. To come turning away from that traitor's role we have played and come to Jesus. Come to the cross. Salvation is only in Him. There is no other name given under heaven whereby we may be saved. Only Jesus. If you believe that, you come to Him. Right now, while we stand and sing this song.